be well with them. I leave it to you." Then Judge Twisden, beginning to speak some angry words, I appealed to Judge Foster and Judge Mallett, who had heard me overnight. Thereupon they said they did not accuse me, for they had nothing against me. Then stood up Esquire Marsh, who was of the king's bedchamber, and told the judges it was the king's pleasure that I should be set at liberty, seeing no accuser came up against me. They asked me whether I would put it to the king and council, and I said, "Yes, with the good will." Thereupon they sent the sheriff's return, which he had made to the writ of habeas corpus, containing the matter charged against me in the mitimus, to the king, that he might see for what I was committed. The return of the sheriff of Lancaster was as follows. By virtue of his majesty's writ, to me directed, and hereunto annexed, I certify that before the receipt of the said writ, George Fox, in the said writ mentioned, was committed to his majesty's jail at the castle of Lancaster, in my custody, by a warrant from Henry Porter, Esquire, one of his majesty's justices of peace within the county, Palatine aforesaid, bearing date the 5th of June, now last past, for that he, the said George Fox, was generally suspected to be a common disturber of the peace of this nation, an enemy of our sovereign lord the king, and a chief upholder of the Quaker sect, that he, together with others of his fanatic opinion, have of late endeavored to make insurrections in these parts of the country, and to embroil the whole kingdom in blood. And this is the cause of his taking and detaining. Nevertheless, the body of said George Fox I have ready before Thomas Mallett, Knight, one of his majesty's justices, assigned to hold pleas before his majesty, at his chamber in Sergeant's Inn, in Fleet Street, to do and receive these things which his majesty's said justice shall determine concerning him in this behalf, as by the aforesaid writ is required. George Chetham, Esquire, Sheriff. On perusal of this and consideration of the whole matter, the king, being satisfied of my innocency, commanded his secretary to send an order to Judge Mallett for my release, which he did thus: "It is his majesty's pleasure that you give order for releasing and setting at full liberty the person of George Fox, late a prisoner in Lancaster jail, and commanded hither by an habeas corpus. And this signification of his majesty's pleasure shall be your sufficient warrant, dated at Whitehall, the 24th of October, 1660. Edward Nicholas, for Sir Thomas Mallett Knight, one of the justices of the King's Bench." When this order was delivered to Judge Mallett, he forthwith sent his warrant to the Marshal of the King's Bench for my release, which warrant was thus worded: "By virtue of a warrant which this morning I have received from the Right Honorable Sir Edward Nicholas, Knight, one of His Majesty's principal secretaries, for the releasing and setting at liberty of George Fox, late a prisoner in Lancaster jail, and thence brought thither by habeas corpus, and yesterday committed unto your custody, I do hereby require you accordingly to release and set the said prisoner, George Fox, at liberty, for which this shall be your warrant and discharge, given under my hand the 25th day of October, in the year of our Lord God, 1660, Thomas Mallett. To Sir John Lenthal, Knight, Marshal of the King's Bench, or his deputy. Thus, after I had been a prisoner somewhat more than 20 weeks, I was freely set at liberty by the King's command, the Lord's power having wonderfully wrought for the clearing of my innocency, and Porter, who committed me, not daring to appear to make good the charge he had falsely suggested against me. But after it was known I was discharged, a company of envious, wicked spirits were troubled, and terror took hold of Justice Porter, for he was afraid I would take the advantage of the law against him for my wrong imprisonment, and thereby undo him, his wife, and children. And indeed I was pressed by some in authority to make him and the rest examples, but I said I should leave them to the Lord, if the Lord forgave them, then I should not trouble myself with them.
Chapter 14. Labors, Dangers, and Sufferings, 1661-1662. Now did I see the end of the travail which I had in my sore exercise at Reading. For the everlasting power of the Lord was over all, and his blessed truth, life, and light shined over the nation. Footnote 163. In 1658, Fox had written, I went to Reading, where I was under great exercises and sufferings, and in great travail of spirit for about 10 weeks. This was apparently over the disturbed political situation, and he tells us that at this time he had a sight and sense of the king's return. Great and glorious meetings we had, and very quiet, and many flocked unto the truth. Richard Hubberthorne had been with the king, who said that none should molest us so long as we lived peaceably, and promised this upon the word of a king, telling Richard that we might make use of his promise. Footnote 164. Poor George little realized how futile this promise was to prove, or how soon the whips of Oliver were to become scorpions under the new order of affairs. Some friends were also admitted to the House of Lords to declare their reasons why they could not pay tithes, swear, or go to the steeple house worship, or join with others in worship, and the Lords heard them moderately. There being about 700 friends in prison who had been committed under Oliver's and Richard's government upon contempts, so called, when the king came in, he set them all at liberty. There seemed at that time an inclination and intention in the government to grant friends liberty, because those in authority were sensible that we had suffered as well as they under the former powers. But still, when anything was going forward in order thereto, some dirty spirits or other that would seem to be for us threw something in the way to stop it. Footnote 165. In this instance, 50 monarchy men whose insurrection brought on the new persecution. It was said there was an instrument drawn up for confirming our liberty, and that it only wanted signing, when suddenly that wicked attempt of the 5th monarchy people broke out and put the city and nation in an uproar. This was on a first day night, and very glorious meetings we had had that day, wherein the Lord's truth shone over all, and his power was exalted above all. But about midnight or soon after, the drums beat, and the cry was, Arm, arm. I got up out of bed and in the morning took boat and landing at Whitehall stairs, walked through Whitehall. The people there looked strangely at me, but I passed through them and went to Pall Mall, where diverse friends came to me, though it had now become dangerous to pass through the streets, for by this time the city and suburbs were up in arms. Exceedingly rude the people and soldiers were. Henry Fell, going to a friend's house, was knocked down by the soldiers, and would have been killed had not the Duke of York come by. Great mischief was done in the city this week, and when the first day came, as friends went to their meeting, many were taken prisoners. I stayed at Pall Mall, intending to be at the meeting there, but on seventh day night, a company of troopers came and knocked at the door. The servant let them in. They rushed into the house and laid hold of me, and there being amongst them one that had served under the Parliament, he put his hand to my pocket and asked whether I had any pistol. I told him, You know I do not carry pistols. Why, therefore, ask such a question of me, whom you know to be a peaceable man? Others of the soldiers ran into the chambers and there found in bed Esquire Marsh, who, though he was one of the king's bedchamber, out of his love to me, came and lodged where I did. When they came down again, they said, Why should we take this man away with us? We will let him alone. Oh, said the Parliament soldier, he is one of the heads and a chief ringleader. Upon this, the soldiers were taking me away, but Esquire Marsh, hearing of it, sent for him that commanded the party, and desired him to let me alone, for he would see me forthcoming in the morning. In the morning, before they could fetch me, and before the meeting was gathered, there came a company of foot soldiers to the house, and one of them, drawing his sword, held it over my head. I asked him why he drew his sword at an unarmed man, at which his fellows, being ashamed, bade him put up his sword. These foot soldiers took me away to Whitehall before the troopers came for me. As I was going out, several friends were coming into the meeting. I commended their boldness and cheerfulness and encouraged them to persevere therein. When I was brought to Whitehall, the soldiers and people were exceedingly rude, yet I declared truth to them. But some great persons came by who were very full of envy. "Why," said they, "do ye let him preach? Put him into a place where he may not stir." So into such a place they put me, and the soldiers watched over me. I told them that, though they could confine my body and shut that up, yet they could not stop the word of life. Some came and asked me what I was. I told them, a preacher of righteousness. After I had been kept there 2 or 3 hours, Esquire Marsh spoke to Lord Gerard, and he came and bade them set me at liberty. The marshal, when I was discharged, demanded fees. I told him I could not give him any, neither was it our practice, and I asked him how he could demand fees of me, who was innocent. Then I went through the guards, the Lord's power being over them, and after I had declared truth to the soldiers, I went up the streets with 2 Irish colonels that came from Whitehall, to an inn where many friends were at that time prisoners under a guard. I desired these colonels to speak to the guard to let me go in to visit my friends that were prisoners there, but they would not. Then I stepped up to the sentry and desired him to let me go up, and he did so. While I was there, the soldiers went again to Pall Mall to search for me, but not finding me, they turned towards the inn and bade all come out that were not prisoners. So they went out. But I asked the soldiers that were within whether I might not stay there a while with my friends. They said yes. I stayed and so escaped their hands again. Towards night I went to Pall Mall to see how it was with the friends there, and after I had stayed a while I went up into the city. Great rifling of houses there was at this time to search for people. I went to a private friend's house, and Richard Hubbard Thorne was with me. There we drew up a declaration against plots and fightings to be presented to the king and council, but when finished and sent to print, it was taken in the press. On this insurrection of the 5th monarchy, men, great havoc was made both in city and country, so that it was dangerous for sober people to stir abroad for several weeks after. Men or women could hardly go up and down streets to buy provisions for their families without being abused. In the country, they dragged men and women out of their houses and some sick men out of their beds by the legs. Nay, one man in a fever, the soldiers dragged out of bed to prison, and when he was brought there, he died. His name was Thomas Paychin. Margaret Fell went to the king and told him what sad work there was in the city and nation, and showed him we were an innocent, peaceable people, and that we must keep our meetings as heretofore, whatever we suffered, but that it concerned him to see that peace was kept, that no innocent blood might be shed. The prisons were now everywhere filled with friends and others, in the city and country, and the posts were so laid for the searching of letters that none could pass unsearched. We heard of several thousands of our friends that were cast into prison in several parts of the nation, and Margaret Fell carried an account of them to the king and council. They wondered how we could have such intelligence, seeing they had given such strict charge for the intercepting of all letters. But the Lord did so order it that we had an account notwithstanding all their stoppings. Footnote 166. Fox wrote a tender letter to the sufferers in prison and a declaration from the harmless, innocent people of God called Quakers was sent to the king. Soon after, the king gave forth a proclamation that no soldier should search any house without a constable. But the jails were still full, many thousands of Friends being in prison, which mischief was occasioned by the wicked rising of the Fifth Monarchy men. But when those that were taken came to be executed, they did us the justice to clear us openly from having any hand in or knowledge of their plot. After that, the king, being continually importuned thereto, issued a declaration that Friends should be set at liberty without paying fees. But great labor, travail, and pains were taken before this was obtained, for Thomas More and Margaret Fell went often to the king about it. Much blood was shed this year, many of the old king's judges being hung, drawn, and quartered. Amongst them that so suffered, Colonel Hacker was one. He had sent me prisoner from Leicester to London in Oliver's time, of which an account is given before. A sad day it was in a repaying of blood with blood, for in the time of Oliver Cromwell, when several men were put to death by him, being hung, drawn, and quartered for pretended treasons, I felt from the Lord God that their blood would be required, and I said as much then to several. And now upon the king's return, several that had been against him were put to death, as the others that were for him had been before by Oliver. This was sad work, destroying people, contrary to the nature of Christians, who have the nature of lambs and sheep. But there was a secret hand in bringing this day upon that hypocritical generation of professors, who, being got into power, grew proud, haughty, and cruel beyond others, and persecuted the people of God without pity. When Friends were under cruel persecutions and sufferings in the Commonwealth's time, I was moved of the Lord to write to Friends to draw up accounts of their sufferings and lay them before the justices at their sessions, and if they would not do justice, then to lay them before the judges at the assize, and if they would not do justice, then to lay them before the Parliament, the Protector and his Council, that they might all see what was done under their government, and if they would not do justice, then to lay it before the Lord, who would hear the cries of the oppressed and of the widows and fatherless, whom they had made so. For that for which we suffered and for which our goods were spoiled was our obedience to the Lord in His power and His Spirit. He was able to help and to succor, and we had no helper in the earth but Him. And He heard the cries of His people and brought an overflowing scourge over the heads of all our persecutors, which brought a dread and a fear amongst and on them all, so that those who had nicknamed us, who are the children of light, and in scorn called us Quakers, the Lord made to quake, and many of them would have been glad to hide themselves amongst us, and some of them, through the distress that came upon them, did at length come to confess to the truth. Many ways were these professors warned, by word, by writing, and by signs, but they would believe none till it was too late. William Simpson was moved of the Lord to go at several times for 3 years, naked and barefooted before them, as a sign to them, in markets, courts, towns, cities, to priests' houses, and to great men's houses, telling them, "So shall ye be stripped naked as I am stripped naked." And sometimes he was moved to put on hair sackcloth, and to besmear his face, and to tell them, "So will the Lord God besmear all your religion as I am besmeared." Great sufferings did that poor man undergo, sore whippings with horse whips and coach whips on his bare body, grievous stoning and imprisonments in 3 years' time before the king came in, that they might have taken warning, but they would not, and rewarded his love with cruel usage. Only the mayor of Cambridge did nobly to him, for he put his gown about him and took him into his house.